ever wanted was everything. All we ever got was cold. Get up, eat jelly, sandwich bars and barbed wire. Squash every week into a day.
CITR 101.9 FM, this is the Inkstead Show, the radio show where we, for the most part, talk about comics or talk to cartoonists. My special guest today is Jesse Recklaw. Do I have you there, Jesse?
Here I am.
Fantastic. Good. You're sounding good. Jesse's new book is The Night of Your Life, a collection of your slow wave comic strips.
That's right.
I got it right. From Dark Horse Books, just came out, what, last month?
Last month, month and a half.
And you've been doing a whirlwind tour, one might say.
It has been a whirlwind.
You've been crisscrossing, or is it just one crossing and then crossback?
I kind of broke it up in two parts. I did the East Coast in a little figure eight, and then did the West Coast, which, since I live in Portland, Oregon, I kind of did California around the Ape show,
mm-hmm.
and then, I'm kind of separating a lot of the Pacific Northwest stuff up here because I can travel easily from my home and come back.
Now, why haven't you made any arrangements to come to Vancouver?
Oh, boy, I was trying to. Let me tell you. I had a really hard time getting stores on the West Coast to get back to me.
Really?
It was funny. On the East Coast, they'd let me know, like, right away, you know, yeah, we can do it, or no, fuck you.
Jesse likes to curse. Listener discretion be advised. Don't worry, we're not going to have some kind of Nipplegate controversy.
Okay, sweet. But on the West Coast, boy, they were, I mean, true to West Coast slacker form, they would just take months to get back to me. And then some of them just never did, and I didn't know if I should try to schedule a different event or whatever, but...
Well, if you ever decide to come to Vancouver, I recommend Lucky's being the preferred... location for
Lucky's. Okay.
Your genre of comics.
I have only been to Vancouver once when I was a wee lad for the World's Fair.
The Expo.
Expo.
Not the World's Fair.
No,
the
Expo. Wasn't it? Oh, jeez, I've told everyone I've been to the World's Fair. I'm a good liar.
That's more like something they had in Montreal. Or was it a World's Fair? I'm like, it was called Expo 86, but...
It was 1986, yeah.
Yes. It was a lovely year of, I don't know, concrete and hot summer. And apparently, Eisersen Neubauten played a show that I would have been 8, so no way would have seen. That was fantastic, and they lit the stage on fire.
Wow. Yeah, I was too young and dumb to have known about that.
I think
I enjoyed it.
Eisersen Neubauten played. Tangerine Dream even played.
Wow.
Yeah, all these fantastic, crazy bands. Apparently the Tangerine Dream show was just nothing but crazy visuals and a couple of moogs.
I just ate some candy and got bored. I do remember Vancouver was very clean. I was amazed.
Yeah.
Cleanest city I'd ever been in up until that point.
Yeah, it's in parts.
In parts, yeah.
In parts. We have our filthy parts, don't worry.
Yeah, well, don't we all.
Now, back to you,
okay. The
man, the artist, the night of your life. That's such a great phrase.
Oh, thanks. I toyed with a lot of titles.
Now, let's get a little background on you, because this by far is one piece of many, from what I understand. You got started doing mini comics many years ago, am I correct?
Yeah, actually, this is my 20-year anniversary. First mini comic I put out in 1988. I was 17. It was sort of a goofy high school romance with some sex and death in it, but had a really nerdy edge to it as well.
Well, it's important to have the nerdy parts.
I guess.
If comic guys are anything, they're all nerdy. No, we're not all nerdy, are we?
You know, all the more recent cartoonists I've been meeting, now that the graphic novel boom is really on for sure this time, so many kids these days just don't seem nerdy enough to be cartoonists. I'm surprised.
They're all having fun and partying. It's
I know,
like,
they're
you
all
know,
thriving.
You gotta go sit in your room alone.
Of course, it's popular to be a nerd now, or at least it was, for like 10 years now. The nerd boom is also on.
Yeah.
And there's so many nerd posers.
They're not real nerds.
I know. I get so mad. Like, you guys didn't, have to wear a back brace when you were 12. Not a real nerd.
Were you on a first name basis with your orthodontist?
Yeah, really.
So, what got you into comics? What were some of your early comic loves?
My grandparents bought me a copy of World's Finest when I was 8 years old, and I was hooked forever. I think, like I say, I was a true original nerd, and my parents moved a lot, so it was hard for me to make friends at first, so comics were my abiding friend that I could take with me whenever we moved. I don't know, just really fell into it deeply. Regretfully, now I wasted so much money and time bagging and boarding superhero comics in my youth when I should have been, looking for a girlfriend or something.
Is that such a bad thing?
Yeah.
Now, when did you find, really hit your stride as far as doing what you wanted to do with mini comics? Like, did you intend for a long time, I am a cartoonist? Did you go to art school,
Right.
Fill me in.
I don't know if I've hit my stride yet. Let's see. I dropped out of college at 18 and tried to become a professional cartoonist and failed miserably. And I think probably not till 1988, maybe, so 10 years trying, that I actually... I was kind of able to make it a living at that point. My slow wave strip was in about 10 papers at that time, and I was living pretty cheaply, so was able to make a living then. And I was starting to do more experimental stuff, and was kind of starting to get my writing voice. But I think it's been 10 years since then, and I still feel my legs still feel a little wobbly, I guess.
So, you started doing slow wave 10 years ago then?
That, 1995.
13. Wow.
Yeah.
Where did the idea originally come from for doing this a daily? Or not a daily, but a
weekly.
Weekly.
I was doing a dream comic, comic book that I was self-publishing, 24-page comic with a glossy cover, you know, kind of out of nostalgia for all the comics I liked when I was a kid. In the 90s, there was sort of a boom of dream comics, so I published one, and, oh boy, I better hide, the doorbell just rang.
it's Mormons.
let me see. So I was, you know, drawing other people's dreams, and there were some dreams that I received as dream submissions that were too short to be like a long story, so I decided to draw those as just strips. And at the time, the internet was just starting out, and everybody was like, "You gotta have weekly content. You know, content is king." So I put the short strips up on my website, and I decided I was going to try to, you know, do a weekly webcomic as an attractor to my website to hopefully sell the comic books that I was publishing, but I never really sold enough comic books and eventually quit self-publishing, but the strip kind of took off.
You weren't able to jump into the internet millions?
Yeah, never been able to do that. That, you know, that whole making money through the internet, nobody even thought about that for the next, like, 5 years. At first it was just like, drive people to your website, and then 5 years later they invented that word, monetize. Monetize your website. Love that word.
Throw in the advertising.
Right, advertising and donation cups and whatever. Cafe Press t-shirts.
I'm going to throw in a quick song that cues into one of the strips I want to ask you about.
Okay.
One of your song requests, The Prince, and then
awesome.
You can
I'm gonna go answer my
check
door.
Out the Mormons at the door.
Okay.
We'll be right back. See you at 101.9 FM. CITR 101.9 FM. This is a very 80s episode of the Ink Studs. Just so people know, here at CITR, we are doing our funding drive, which starts at 5 o'clock today. And the phone number to call if you want to pledge money towards the wonderfulness that is CITR, it is 604-822-UNIT, whatever that is. Let's see, 8648 822 8648. I'm really on my feet here today. And we will have a whole thwack of wonderful comics available for people that donate money to the wonderfulness that is CITR. I've got a big box of stuff from Raincoast Books, which includes a fair amount of Drawn and Quarterly stuff, including stuff by Rudo Modan, the big King Cat book and much more. I can't remember what's in the box. And I also got a lovely book. Someone sent me their art book from the Netherlands to be given away. And so I'll have all that stuff listed later, as well as You Ain't No Dancer from my good friend Ed Brisson at Reliable Press, a nice Vancouver group. And on a side note, Jesse's talking about 20 years in the comics. This week is the third year anniversary of the Ink Studs. So
awesome.
Yeah, 3 years of being the top West Coast Canadian radio show about comics. Because I think we're the only one.
Oh,
wah, wah, wah. Now, the reason I played that that print song is one of the strips in here by where you took the dream of Isaac Cates.
Yes.
Is that how you pronounce it? Is it Cates?
Yes.
Yeah. With the Super Funk.
Right.
I love that one.
Me too.
I'm trying to find it in my book. I don't even
know. Oh, yeah, that's a great one. Where Prince, hulks out and turns into some giant, Kirby-esque robot monster.
The funk-emitting robot. My name is Prince, and I am funky. He emitted so much funk that the women of the city were literally reduced to jelly.
Literally.
Literally.
That was fun to draw. That was a great one.
So when did you... So when you're doing the comic before you did the weekly, it was, a mix of yours and other people's dreams?
Pretty much, I've always tried to draw other people's dreams. There are some of my own that I feel like are good enough that I can draw, but I usually slip them in as a pseudonym. But, not 95% of them are other people's. That was my hook. There were so many other dream comics that were the author's dreams. So I was trying to be a little bit different, just try something else out.
So is Rick Veitch's thing an influence on you at all?
His wasn't. Julie Doucet was really my big influence.
Mm-hmm.
I loved her ability to capture just the really weirdness of dreams and those moments. She really got in there and just got those little nooks and crannies and put them on the page.
They're so visceral.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah.
And she's flooding the city with her moontime blood.
Yeah. There were a lot of floods, too. Fluids, not floods. A flood of fluids.
Yeah.
Yeah, visceral is a good word. She was terrific. I think that I read her comics and I read other people that were inspired by her comics. It all kind of came from her. And later I found Rick Veitch's stuff. And actually, later I found Jim Woodring's stuff, which I don't know why I didn't see at the time in the early 90s when I first started drawing dreams. And Jim Woodring was really another big influence.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say Doucet and Woodring for sure just kind of jived with my mind.
No, Woodring, you mean is more not his Frank stuff, but his Jim stuff?
Yeah, the Jim stuff. Yeah. I mean, I love the Frank stuff too, but just for people that are drawing dreams, I would say those are the two biggest influences for me.
It's from a whole other world.
They really, presented that holistic world that even though they were only showing elements of it, you felt like it was a complete entity. And I like Veitch's stuff, but it doesn't seem as, at least to me, I wasn't able to enter the world that he was presenting. Or maybe he wasn't trying to show you a complete world, but he was just showing some details of it. I don't know.
Now, what do you suggest for people as a way of being able to remember dreams and recollect them?
It's one of those things that if you just start doing it, you'll get better at it, like a lot of things. It was the case for me. I had to keep a dream journal when I was in high school. I had a psychology class for half a year. And it's funny to reread those. I reread that dream journal all the time. But, it starts out and I can't remember, probably whatever, 9 nights out of 10, I can't remember anything. But eventually I start to, remember stuff. And it's a skill. It really is a skill to try to track through your brain. And usually you remember the last thing that happened, and you need to kind of go backwards and remember what happened before that. And if you're writing stuff down, it's best to just write down every little fragment you can remember at first, and then you can look back at those fragments and help piece them all together. Use, the fragments to jog your memory.
and create some kind of narrative out of what's in there.
Yeah, but God, you can spend so much time on it. I eventually stopped keeping a dream journal because I would get up in the morning and like 2 hours would go by writing stuff down.
Before it's gone.
Yeah. You know, I sleep enough already. I didn't need to add to it.
So, like, when someone gives you something for one of these things, because they're all pretty minimal four-panel
right.
strips, are they usually all pretty short synopses, or do you kind of have to take, like, different long, short ones? And
I do a lot of editing. And sometimes they're too short, so I send a follow-up email and ask for extra details. But for the most part, I'm, you know, cutting stuff down, usually trimming off the beginning or the ending. To get to the meat in the middle there. They're shaped a lot for to be presented as comics.
Now, you have the book arranged into 10 parts.
Yeah.
Tell me how you divided up into these different sections, and I'll just name out a couple chapters. I was in a bed with a monkey doing the newspaper crossword. I took a bath in melted butter and forgot to dry off before getting dressed. I was teaching my cat to play basketball.
Right. You're not going to guess how I organized it? I did spend a long time trying to organize all this material. And it's funny, no one's really picked up on my organizational method, so maybe it didn't work.
They have themes. Like, I find they have themes.
They do, yeah. Each chapter has a theme. You know, my first book called Dream Tunes, which was about 100 pages, so what is that, two-fifths the size of this book, people would mention that, you know, they like to keep that book, you know, on the back of the toilet because it was good to read a couple, you know, at a time, which, you know, is really a place of honor. There aren't many books that people want to, you know, present so publicly, but I never envisioned the book to be like something you just want to read a little bit of. I wanted someone to read it the whole way through. So I tried to think of a way of organizing the new material, especially because there was so much more of it too,
mm-hmm.
into, you know, one long thing that you could even read as a quasi, you know, graphic novel or something. My idea was to organize it roughly around the apparent age of the dreamer, but even more than that, around the life stage development. I don't know if that sounds too hippie-esque. sort of taken from the psychologist Maslow. He had the, and I'm just remembering this from my high school class again, so it's probably pretty wrong and fuzzy, but basically we go through several stages in life where we're concerned with some aspect of development. So when you're a kid, you want to gain autonomy, and then when you're a teenager, you want to fall in love, and then, you know, you get married, and then you're concerned with your career, and then later when you get older, I'm skipping stages here, but you get older and then you think about death and the afterlife. So I tried to put it in that order, basically. So the final chapter is mostly about the afterlife, and the penultimate chapter is about death.
So the work covered in this is like the last how many years?
This is 5 years.
5 years.
Of work.
I was wondering if it was just a sampling or a direct
calling. I threw out about 10% of the material. I just didn't think was, I don't know. I mean, I don't regret drawing any of the strips, but, you know, I needed to trim some of the fat, I guess, and book signatures need to line up with a certain number of pages. So I had to throw some out. And some of them were really hard to fit into my 10 themes, too, so they had to go.
Couldn't you have a theme that's just, you know, straight out of left field, or they were that far out of left field?
Yeah, yeah. A couple. It was weird. Yeah, there was like one about like a bunch of pudding. I was like, that's not a life stage development, pudding.
Yeah, well, it could be childhood or old age, depending, you know.
I couldn't do it. It was like a cop that was like stealing people's pudding and feeding it to other people. It wasn't working out for me.
Well, that could be like a sign of someone like with a developing family trying to support their family, but their food's being stolen by the system.
I don't know.
Or is that too?
Maybe I should have consulted you.
Do you ever swamp yourself in analyses, or do you just try to go in there and just
When I first started drawing dreams, I thought I should learn a little bit more about it, and I've always been attracted to the theories of Carl Jung. So I did read a lot, and I went to some dream conferences, but I quickly lost interest in that. And I do think of this strip as a humor strip, and, you know, analyzing humor is always a bad idea. So I kind of stopped doing that. I would stop myself from trying to analyze things too much and just read them as you know, a real anecdote or as a joke, you know, that you might see on The Simpsons or something, you know, just some kind of surreal joke. And I think that, you know, like a good joke, a good dream has some integrity and has some coherence to it. And, you know, flows well. So I think, you know, when you read a good story or hear a good anecdote, you just get this kind of warm feeling that, you know, that clicks, that really works together. So that's how I try to read submissions.
What are some of the crazier dream submissions? I'm sure you've been asked this question many times.
I don't know how to respond to crazier. Boy,
weird, crazy. Odd.
They're all weird. They're all odd. Yeah, I don't know. I tend to draw dreams that have some kind of twist to them. That's what I like.
Mm-hmm.
I like dream logic. You know, I think that your logic side of your brain is like half asleep when you're asleep. So you kind of construct these dream logic scenarios where when you wake up, you think about it, and you're like, that doesn't make any sense at all. But while you were asleep, it totally made sense, you know, that you had to cut your cat's head off so that he could use his own head to, you know, slam dunk a basket with it because the basketball was too big for him. You know, that's the kind of thing that while you're dreaming it, you're like, well, yeah, of course, you know, the basketball's too big, but his head's about the right size for him to dribble. But when you wake up, you're like, oh, my God.
That's horrible. How could you do that? It's kind of fun going through and just seeing the odd things that would jump into people's minds in their dreams, like one, the coup de Smurf.
Oh, right, right.
I was standing on a few trampled Smurfs.
Right. That one's fun.
Is that one of the things you look for in a dream, is actually, like, having fun with that dream?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I like to draw things that are fun to draw, so if there's a cool visual element, I'll put that in there. Or I'll, you know, be more likely to choose those. And I also more often will draw dreams that involve famous people or fictional characters, some kind of pop culture reference maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm drawing these for a wider audience, so I want it to be interesting to more than just the person who dreamt it. So dreams that, you know, I get submissions like this all the time where the dreamer's friend is in the dream and they do something weird, you know, and in their submission they'll be like, if you knew Jim, you would realize how funny this dream is.
I don't know.
No one knows Jim. That's not funny.
There's some that are funny and there's some that are just kind of sad.
Oh, I guess.
Like the I was just flipping through in the Dave Cooper one where he gets on stage and gets a rock out with Ramones and then he goes back the next day and they had someone else. It's like, aww.
Yeah, like that, by the way, is not Dave Cooper, the cartoonist, but
another Dave Cooper.
But he looks just like him too. And
that's I saw the drawing. I'm like, oh, that's Dave Cooper's got bald. Right. He's got a goatee.
Right. Yeah, it's different Dave Cooper, common name. I like, you know, I'm kind of into black humor and sad humor, so I do tend to draw those dreams that have the wah-wah.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of turnaround, any kind of twist, you know, really works well with comedy. And for me, I like to have a more of a narrative element to my comics. So if it has some kind of twist like that, then it really kind of has like a mini narrative arc in it.
I totally gapped out. I like this question. All just set. Not
what's
good.
That?
I had a question just all ready to ask, and then it just jumped out of my head. Oh,
I dislodged it from your brain. Sorry.
You just kicked it right out. When you do the illustrations, do you try and ask people for reference just so you kind of
like draw what they look like?
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a form on my website where they type in their suggested title and the description of the dream and the description of themselves and the date that they dreamt it and other information. But, yeah, I like to have a description of what they look like. I think it gives each little mini story a little extra character of its own and helps it stand out. And I think if I didn't ask for that, then I would be tempted to kind of draw everybody exactly the same. And
they're all going to be you.
Yeah. I don't know. The faces that I always tend to draw kind of look like these sort of, it's weird. They're sort of like these quasi-ethnic kind of Southern European looking heads. I don't know why. They always look kind of roundy to me with big lips. And, it's probably better that I'm stretching myself as an artist and trying to draw different looking faces.
Got to push your style.
Yeah.
I'm going to do another quick song break.
All right.
What would you like to hear?
Let me think what I want to say for the end. Why don't you play Lie Still, Little Bottle?
All right. We'll be right back with Jesse Recklaw. This is They Might Be Giants, Lie Still, Little Bottle.
Lie still, little bottle. Shake my shaky hand. Black coffee's not enough for me. I need a better friend. One pill at the bottom. Sing my favorite song. I know I must investigate. I hope that I can sing along. There's no time for metaphors, cried the little pill to me. He said life is a placebo, a masquerading as a simile. But I knew that pill was lying, too gregarious, too nice. But as he walked, I had to sing this twice. Lie still, little bottle. Don't twist it, ain't twisting time. With every move you make, you just disintegrate my ever-troubled mind. Shake my shaky hand. My coffee's not enough for me. I need a better friend. One pill at the bottom. Singing my favorite song. I know I must investigate. I hope that I can sing along. But I still, little bottom. But I still. But I still.
CITR 101.9 FM, this is the Ink Stud Show. I have a couple announcements I need to make before we continue with our conversation with Mr. Jesse Recklaw. Just a reminder, folks, that today the funding drive here at CITR is starting out, and expect next week a lot of mentioning of it. Starts at 5 o'clock today, 822-8648, if you'd like to pledge any money after 5 o'clock. If you want to pledge and do it towards the Ink Studs, you can get some awesome comics, and I'll have a stack I need to sort through and list off, but I will make sure you get some goodies, and the comics are only for if you can come and pick them up in Vancouver. And it's going to be fun. Next week, I'm not sure who's going to be on. I'm thinking it hopefully will be...
Big mystery.
Yeah. I've got a couple things in mind. It's either going to be a pre-recorded short interview I did with someone, and just me cutting it up a lot and coming in a lot and mentioning the funding drive, or it will be, I'm hoping Mark Atmos Pilon will come in. I'm bugging him and maybe someone else. I don't know yet, but Mark, if you're listening, come on, buddy. He's a swell, not necessarily a comic artist, but a very talented illustrator who people will recognize from Georgia Strait as well. He is featured in the type of genre of high fructose and juxtaposed type of stuff. And
does he do comics too?
He doesn't, but the artwork, like, he's very influenced by Gene Deitch.
Uh-huh.
And it's very, like, it's that kind of crossover. It's right. this, like, weird atomic kind of Vespa. I don't know how to really describe it, but...
Kind of the 50s version of 20s art or something?
Maybe. That might be, but,
Have you interviewed people that aren't cartoonists before?
Many.
Many?
Many.
Wow.
Well, not many. Okay. One interview that'll be coming up actually in 2 weeks is I sat down with Diamanda Galas.
Wow.
Yeah, a couple days ago. And
scary. Is she going to have 10 mics in the room?
No. Oh. It was over the phone.
Isn't that a well? I just remember when she was doing performance singing in the 90s. She'd always have multiple mics, right?
Yep. Oh yeah. No, she's fantastic. So she has a show in Vancouver, and so I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna play this parts of the interview I did with her, and the whole interview will be featured on the website. But I'm gonna be playing parts of it because it'll be the funding drive, and I gotta do lots of pitches for everyone.
Yes, I think everyone should support your awesome radio station and your show. I think this is terrific.
Thanks, Jesse.
Yes, and all those comics you listed, I mean, anything from John and Quarterly really would be amazing.
And I have more stuff to mention.
Whoa.
That we're doing with the show. I know! One thing I'm doing right now, which isn't being played on air, but if you go to inksuds.com, is I'm interviewing a lot of folks that are in the new Kramer's Ergot book, which
right.
is about the size of a boogie board.
Yeah.
Literally.
Is that... So, like, if you're not so into the comics, you can go do some water sports afterwards with it, or
pretty much, yeah. That's. I mean, it's probably boogie boards aren't cheap.
No, that's a good pitch for them. I'm going to suggest that. Sammy, next time I see him.
I think they'll get upset at me for saying that. So I've so far I've posted an interview I did with Anders Nilsson, who was actually on the show a couple of years ago, but I caught up with him again, and then Matt Thurber, I'll be posting an interview with him next week, and then I'll be talking to Josh Simmons, Frank Santoro, Ron Rigi, and then of course the man himself, Sammy Harkham, will
Great.
Probably be the climax of the series. And in Vancouver this weekend, so much to mention. On Sunday there's the comic convention, of which we'll be featuring L. Feldstein, the man who edited Mad Magazine for 30-odd years.
Wow.
He's
What's
awesome.
What's the name of that convention?
Vancouver Comic Con.
Uh-huh. Great. Is that annual?
It's every about 2 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not a big affair, but it's a fun affair. Once a year, they do a small press one, which would be ideal for any of you Portland folks to possibly come up. This year, we had Kim Deitch as the featured guest, and David Boswell was there as well.
Is that's different than the Leonard Wong?
That's Leonard. That's the man.
I thought it used to be called Something and Stories.
Comics and Stories is the small press one.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So he does that every August.
He's busy. Wow.
He is. He's
a great guy.
Yeah, and he's bringing up L. Feldstein. I mean, L. Feldstein, come on, people. And if you check out the website, there's actually, I'm going to up it so it's up recently. It's, L. came a couple, 3 years ago. When we first started the show, and I didn't really have things figured out how to do these phone interviews. Damn, they are easy to do. And we had a long talk, me, Don King, one of the co-hosts, and Colin Upton, about Al's work and the influence that it has. And not only did he do Mad Magazine, but he also did Tales of the Crypt and all sorts of other wonderful EC Mad mags.
I think that EC style was also an influence on my slow wave comics.
Oh, yeah?
Definitely into the... look of 50s and early 60s illustration and comics, and certainly that kind of story with a twist element, Twilight Zone kind of stuff.
That would totally make sense, especially the more horror stuff, which is
right.
exactly what Al was doing.
Right, right.
And then my one last announcement, and then I'll shut up, is on Sunday, Torn, who's on the show before this, if people were listening live, he is one of many people, including Colin Upton, featured in the Historionics anthology, and they're doing a launch on Sunday afternoon at the Gem Gallery on Broadway, just east of Maine. Get it? Just east of Maine. Gem. That's what it stands for.
Awesome.
Now you know. And let's get back to our guest, Jesse Recklaw. And speaking of Kramer's Ergot, Crayon's Ego, one of the best comics ever.
Wow. Ever.
Ever.
Man, well, thanks. Everyone's always saying, is there going to be a number two? And I'm like, no, definitely not.
No, you got to do number two, but do it on like a piece of wood.
you know, everyone was saying that when they were going to put out the Kramer's Sundays sized one, that we should do like a Crayon's Ego that's like a centimeter larger than that or something. But I think it would be better to put out the smallest comic ever.
Ooh, that's that's got to be pretty small. There's been some small stuff. I've got some pretty tiny ones at home, but that would be interesting.
I'll have to go into the lab and see what I can come up with. Parody comics are awesome.
They are. And I don't know how many times I've read Crayon's Ego, but even on the bus here, I was reading it, and I was just, like, howling at the stained blankets, Craig Thompson, and all the Jeffrey...
That was drawn by Portland cartoonist Sarah Oleksik. She is an amazing draftsperson.
She is fantastic.
Yeah.
Her strip Ivy is fantastic. It's one of my favorite young folks doing comics.
She's not that young.
I know, she's the same age as me.
No, it's funny, people always say young cartoonist, but they really just mean someone who hasn't had a big publishing deal yet.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
So, who are some of the folks in there? You had Sarah, you had Tom Neely, yourself.
Right.
And
Josh Frankel is in that. Karen Snyder, who is my co-editor. And Greg Beans did the Johnny Ryan parody.
Oh, okay. Which Johnny Ryan, actually, he really liked that one, didn't he?
He did, yeah. We debuted Crayon's Ego at Comic-Con the same year that they debuted Crayon 6, I think. And our booth was one booth away from them, so we were near neighbors. But I gave a copy to Sammy, and he was happy with it.
It's not mean. It's just parody.
No.
And
I think the only person we're a little bit mean to, and which a lot of people are, is James Kochalka.
That's okay.
He's just so easy to parody.
Yeah. That's fine. You can do that. I'm not going to...
No, I don't think we need... I think some other cartoonists should, figure out what's irritating them about the comics industry and do their own parody book. We were really inspired to do that by Kurt Wolfgang's Low Jinx comic.
Oh, okay.
There was an issue of that had some really great parody stuff in it. Josh Frankel, who was in Crayon's Ego, put out a parody called Only the Lonely, which was kind of a parody of, kind of emo, cute brute style. And Tom Neely had an idea to do a parody of all the indie cartoonists doing superhero comics. I kind of stole his idea to do that and twisted it around and turned it into the Kramer's parody.
Is that the story, the Project Inferior?
Yeah, so I can't remember which one of us came up with that title. It was probably Tom. And I wanted him to do that story with that title, and he didn't. He wanted to do that. He did the Tom Gold parody.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I took that title for my own story and did that. So yeah.
Warnock and Staros?
Right. good time.
New, not boring, Mome.
Right.
Bea Manx. Jeffrey Brown.
Yeah, right. My girlfriend, Andrees Arp, says one of the things that really brought her into doing comics was Kurt Wolfgang's Low Jinx issue, because it had all these in-jokes in it, and it was just so attractive. You wanted to read that and read other comics so that you could get the jokes, you know? It was sort of like this underground lure. It was like a dope peddler underneath a bridge being like, hey, kid, come here. You want to check this out?
And that's really what comics should be.
I know. See?
It's, you know,
So we were just hoping to lure in some new comic creators with that issue.
Well, hopefully it worked. Is it still viable anywhere?
No.
It's out of print.
Through about 3 printings on that, and it's out of print now. I think it would be terrific if some publisher out there wanted to collect parody comics and, you know, put out a book. That'd be great.
Hey, if Johnny Ryan can do it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he's got a couple he's got one big book of it. And so.
I'll pitch it to Dark Horse, and their lawyer will promptly quote it.
Come on, Alvin, if you're listening, you've done the boogie board, now do the parodies.
Maybe I'll submit it for a Zurich.
There we go.
Yeah.
Now, your other thing that I've read recently is Blue Fuzz.
Right.
The sad tales of the Blue Fuzz the hero.
I like Sad Tail.
It's sad. It seems like no matter what he does, it just kind of craps out on him.
Right, right. It's totally autobiographical. It's a thin veil.
You've been to hell?
Absolutely.
You've spoken to fire?
I've been working on a comic memoir, kind of some sort of heavy stuff about depression and drug abuse and domestic violence and really lengthy chapters. It's a project I'm working on called Couch Tag, and I just kind of wanted to do something fun just to get away from that and, you know, just keep my creativity active and not let it get too one-sided. The Portland Zine Symposium was coming up. I love that show. It's a local show here, and I just wanted to have something new for the show, and I blasted out the Blue Fuzz comic in like a month, I think. So that was fun.
Yeah, I saw the fun hand-painted cover. I'm like, I gotta have that. I don't even know your stuff, and I'm like, all right.
So. That's, yeah, probably the 40th mini-comic I've made or something.
40 mini-comics.
Yeah.
So tell me about some of your other mini-comics. What are some of the themes that you've explored or some of the fun stories you've done or not so fun?
I've published a number of anthologies, just kind of goofy stuff, joke kind of comics. I had two different mini-comic series that were mostly fiction, pretty either surreal or Dadaistic kind of fiction. A number of one-shots. One of them was called Low Horse, which was kind of an in-joke about my girlfriend's comic anthology, High Horse.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that came about is that I was visiting my friend David Lasky, who lives in Seattle, and is just an amazing cartoonist.
He is the man.
Biggest influences. David has so much stuff that's been in small anthologies and no one has seen, or they've been published in, you know, local magazines or something, and he just had these piles of comics all over his house, and I just picked up this one page and I was like, wow, this is, you know, this is great, David. And he's like, yeah, that was printed in this anthology, you know, that no one ever saw. I've got 20 other pages of that story. And then, you know, he brings out this stack and I was like, my God. So I did like some goofy little 6-page story and slapped it together with David's 20 pages and put out a mini, and that got nominated for an Ignatz Outstanding Mini Comic Award.
Oh, nice.
And I had I had another series of tiny comics. I've always been kind of inspired by Chick Tracts.
Mm-hmm. The old Bible, We're All Going to Hell.
Yeah, just a small size, and that idea that you can like put a message on paper and, you know, transmit your idea to someone through paper. So I did this series of small comics I did called Mime Compliant. I did about 10 issues, and I distributed those for free. I would just print it. They were just little 8-page things, and I would print them up and leave them at coffee shops and on, you know, telephone booths and just all over. Or just drop them in the street in front of a comic book store.
Hopefully someone will read it.
Yeah.
Well, I know when I had Frank Santoro on, he was saying that he did that with his original Storyville newspaper,
right,
where he'd just go and put them in people's mailboxes.
Yeah, yeah, reverse shoplifting. Yeah, I think that's how I got a copy of that original Storyville. No, I probably bought it at Comic Relief in Berkeley. That's a great store.
So you've got you're mentioning the one comic that you're working on. The Couch Tag.
Yeah.
So how long have you been doing that, and what's the eventual plan with it?
Too freaking long. I started the first chapter of that in 1998, I think, and finally finished the first chapter, you know, after stopping and starting a lot, in 2005. And that was reprinted in the Best American Comics 2006. And because of that, I was able to get an agent and some publishers interested. So I have two more chapters finished. I'm hoping there'll be 5 chapters. With any luck, it'll be done in 2010.
Nice. You're going to be another one of those folks putting out stuff by book publishers, aren't you?
Yeah. It's this is the moment.
Did you ever see this coming, doing mini comics?
No way. When I started cartooning, I thought, you know, one day I'll really make it, and I'll live in a trailer, and I'll publish a comic book every 6 months, and also have a day job in a laundromat. You know, that was my dream. One day, some publisher would deign to put out, you know, 5,000 copies of, you know, some comic I would draw, probably called something like, you know, Jackass or, you know, Fuck Up or something. You know, that was the early to mid 90s kind of nihilistic Gen X comic era. And, you know, if somebody offered me that now, I'd be like, forget you. You know, I'm looking for a 5-figure contract.
Bring on the bling.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure we're living in a bubble right now of all these big publisher deals. But can't help but try for it.
Well, isn't it comic book or graphic novels and cookbooks the only ones that are making money now?
Cookbooks, is that right? How come someone hasn't done a graphic novel cookbook?
You know what? I know someone that has.
I'm going to pitch a vegan graphic novel cookbook.
Well, there we go. That's very Portland of you.
For cats.
Yeah. Actually, no. One of the co-hosts here, she did one probably about 5-6 years ago. That was a comic cookbook.
Oh, so. Wow. What was it called?
Scrambled Brains, I think, or Brains, something like Brains. That. Yeah.
That sounds gross. I'm not cooking that.
No. Well, you just said you're a vegan, so...
Do you remember a Canadian mini comics artist? I think he lived more on the East Coast. I think he actually might have lived in your fine capital, Ottawa, named Tim Brown.
Tim Brown.
He had some comics, some recipe comics that I remember reading back then and was kind of inspired by, and I thought, man, there should be a graphic novel cookbook. Well, I didn't say graphic novel. There should be a comics cookbook.
And we can still call them comics.
Okay. Yeah, I know.
It's, you know, it's not so much of a tongue twister. Now, do you have any tour stops coming up?
I have two left. Seattle on November 18th at the University Bookstore. I'll be reading along with Theo Ellsworth, who has a new book out called Capacity, which is super terrific. We just did a book trade. I'm not just saying that because he's my friend, but it's a collection of his mini comics and about 100 new pages.
Oh, wow.
And he did all these kind of like autobiographical introductory strips before each of the sections that kind of explain why he did the story he did and a little bit more about it. And he has a really amazing life of like living in his car and driving around the country. And it adds so much to the comics, for me at least. And it just gives you such a good feeling and makes it really feel like a journey into him, into his world or something.
And that's Theo Ellsworth?
Yeah, Theo Ellsworth. That's published by Secret Acres.
And where are you guys doing the signing at?
It's at University Bookstore in Seattle. And we're also going to read with Kazimierz Strepek.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Morningstar. He's, oh.
Yeah, he's
that
great.
Boy can draw circles around circles.
Whoa. I was hoping his next Morningstar volume would be out for this reading, but it's not, but he'll be reading from the first volume, which I don't think anyone's ever seen him read before, because I really had to twist his arm to get him up there.
I think he did one. Didn't he do one at Stumptown last year? Not this year, but last year?
Gosh, you may be right. It wasn't from his book, though.
No.
It was, I can't remember what it was from. Oh. One of his side stories. That guy gets distracted too easily.
He's fantastic, though, I think.
Yeah, he is.
He's really like, yeah. And what's your other, you said you had two, so one's in Seattle.
The other one will be here in Portland, and I actually don't have the venue lined up yet.
In your own hometown?
I know, but I'll have that info up on my website once. I should figure it out this week.
And that's slowwave.com?
Yeah, slowwave.com.
Excellent. Well, I hope you're able to make it up to Vancouver at some point.
Me too.
It's, we have many fine vegan eateries.
Oh, good.
And, burrito places and whatnot, and yeah. So the book, just so people, Night of Your Life from Dark Horse Comics, or actually, sorry, Dark Horse Books, it's called.
Oh yeah.
And Jesse Reckloth, thank you so much for joining me today, Jesse.
Thank you, Robin. That's been fun.
And I look forward to seeing more comics.
So.
Oh, and I'll also put up a link because you've been doing diary pages. I forgot about that.
Oh, yeah.
Which have been really fun to read and see what's been going on in the tour. So
that's a cool project. It's cool for me.
How long are you going to do it for?
I think I'm going to try for a year. Again,
wow.
By Julie Doucet's 365 days.
That's true.
I'm copying her yet again.
Well, there we go. Check it out, slowwave.com, and I'll have a link for that and the daily diary pages for everyone to check out on the Inkstud site. Thank you so much, Jesse.
Thank you, Robin.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. And, I shouldn't have pressed that so soon. So next week, who knows what we'll have, but it'll be good. And up next, Crimes and Treasons. Don't forget the CITR funding drive, 822-8648 after 5 o'clock. Bye-bye.
Who do you think is it? Who do you think is it? I think I see a shovel.
I'm
a father.
I can't really see.
I can't quite make it.
Who art in heaven?
I can't quite make it. Hear me.
I stand alone and watch the clock. I only wait for it to stop.
What are you?
And in the room, locked up inside me.
My kingdom come.
The cutout magazines remind me.
I will be done.
In my room.
Who do you think is it?
And in my room, against the wall, there is a picture, very small.
On earth, it is in heaven.
A photograph I took some years ago. It shows a picture of the room I know. I sit and wait alone. The walls are white, and in the night, the room is lit by electric lights.
She won't hold me in the mic.
Is in heaven.
I stand alone and watch the clock.
And leave us in temptation.
I only wait for it to stop. The doors are shut and all the windows locked. The only sound is from the clock. I sit and wait alone in my room.
I deliver us from evil. I deliver us from evil.